Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Love Hour. I am your host, Miss Kev on Stage, and I'm joined by my husband and co-host,
The Kev on Stage.
Welcome to the Love Hour podcast, where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of happiness. We have with us a very, listen, I've been excited since August. I actually went back through my emails to see when I first reached out to Emily, and it was like back in August. And I am so freaking excited to have you here with us today. And like I said, that is none other than Miss Emily Nagowski.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm excited too.
She is the author of Come As You Are. I'm looking at the wrong camera. It is a phenomenal book. It's literally changed my life, and I mean that like
my life
without
too.
Exaggeration.
My life too, Emily. I just want to shake your hand. Big fan of your work and the work that you're doing in others. Amen.
Amen.
Father God, we bless you for what you put in.
I told
Sister
her
Nagowski.
That we were churchy.
Oh my God, you did a new work, new creations.
So Emily, I want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Emily Nagowski. I've been a sex educator for about 20 years.
Wow.
Meanwhile, you look all of 25.
42.
Are you really?
Got very lucky genetically.
You look fantastic.
You look great for 42.
As soon as my hair turns gray, I will stop dyeing it blue. I am a big nerd. I always have been. I love brain science.
Mm.
But when I got to undergrad, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to grad school, but I have no idea for what, so I need some volunteer work on my resume. And a guy on my floor said, come be a peer health educator with me. And I was just like, I like health, why not? So I did, and I started going into residence halls and talking about condoms, contraception, and consent. Mm. And even though I loved the brain stuff, and I sort of had this plan to be a clinical neuropsychologist and work with people with traumatic brain injury and stroke, the work I was doing as a sex educator and then as a sexual assault prevention educator,
mm-hmm.
and then as a sexual assault crisis responder,
mm-hmm.
the more invested I got in that work, the more I realized that stuff made me like who I am as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In a way, the intellectual stuff just never could.
Right.
So that's the path I chose. I got trained as a sex therapist and realized I do not have the special magical something that it takes to like sit in a room with a couple and go, mm-hmm.
You got to differentiate your
and how did you feel? I'm an educator by temperament, but I'm also a
by
woman.
By temperament. I That's love
good.
That.
That's good.
I just don't have that thing. I do have the teacher thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I, being a woman who likes to be in charge of things, I was like, well, then I should get a PhD. So I got a PhD basically in public health, concentration in human
sexuality.
Wait,
you Dr. Emily?
Yeah.
You ain't lead with that?
I know, right?
Oh, yeah.
Dr. E, don't just disrespect me by going first name. This is Dr. Emily. You earned that.
I am very much a person that believes in recognizing and respecting the degrees that you have. So if you want, we can definitely call you Dr. Emily Nagowski.
If you enjoy it, you can. But once you get through the doctoral process, you realize how it's really just training and how to conform with culturally constructed.
You know how many pastors I know that just got an honorary divinity degree? They're like, that's a doctor. Amen, pastor.
Right.
I know. Yeah. But they just get it. It's a doctor.
Yeah.
Amen.
Right.
So call it and respect it. Amen. God bless you. We're all standing.
Yeah. I feel like the more seriously you take school, by the end of it, you're like, oh, well, that was really very limited in what it taught me.
Yeah.
So I got a job at Smith College. I taught a class called Women's Sexuality, which was intense. And I put all this science in this class, and the student pushed me really hard, and I pushed them really hard. And at the end of the class, my last question on the final exam was, just tell me one important thing you learned out of all this science. And I had 187 students. More than half of them just wrote something like, I learned I'm normal. I'm normal. I'm not broken. Just because I'm different from other women doesn't mean there's anything wrong with me. I don't know if you've ever graded final exams, but it's not like this usually. I was in my office grading with tears in my eyes, feeling like something important had happened, and I wanted to do it again,
right.
And I wanted to make it accessible to people who were not just students at this school.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the day I decided to write Come As You Are.
Wow.
That's a great origin story.
And then 4.5 years later...
That was only 4 years ago?
No, that was
No, from the time it took her to, yeah, to
the
write
came
the
out in 2015.
Got it. Okay.
And so it's been out for almost 5 years now.
Wow.
Which is, and so this is what I do now is I travel. I've been from Maui to Moscow teaching anyone who will listen about the science of women's sexual well-being so that people can know that they are normal, they are not broken, they're not diseased. And the more they can embrace and accept their sexuality as it is, mm-hmm. the more access to expansive sexual pleasure they'll have.
Expansive sexual pleasure. I like that word, and I like that feeling.
I, number one, after I read your book, if I could say my biggest takeaway, and it sounds like that was purpose by design, was this literal exhale moment. I am normal. Mm-hmm. I am broken. And often when I've ever led or we've done Love Hour Live, if you guys have ever attended, one of the biggest messages that I give is you are normal and you are not broken, because that was such a moment of relief for me that I want to ensure that I'm always passing that along. If you are in any class with me, I want to make sure that you know you're not broken. There is one of the things you said in your book is there is basically like a spectrum of normalcy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so just because you're on this side and I'm on that side doesn't mean either one of us is broken. It just means there's a spectrum and we're all normal. So very good, powerful stuff. I didn't know that story of your how the book came to be. I knew the story of I'm normal because I remember watching and I was like, I was the same girl. I know why they wrote that because I felt it, too. But I didn't realize that kind of was the springboard to the book. Very good. Anything else you wanted to share with us?
I think that's the whole story.
Okay, I am anyone who knows anything about me, if you haven't joined my book club, child, you need to. But you guys know how freaking excited I am to have Emily here with us. And we're going to have a rich, dense conversation about sex, child. All of the things, accelerators, brakes, human
giver syndrome.
I want to say human growth syndrome. We finna talk about all the things. But before we get there, I want to tell you, because we're talking about women and all of that, I want to tell you about Third Love. We just hit Emily to Third Love. Yes, she says she went and taught a class and she wanted to take that bra off at the end of a 10-hour day. And mm-hmm. if you are a woman who's ever worn a bra, you know that feeling. You be in the car, unsnapping and running it through your shirt. We've all done this. And Emily literally just asked me, and I said to her, Third Love is the only bra, and I stand by that. I mean that, like, sincerely. The only bra that I do not have that immediate get this off of me, I want the day to end feeling. And so I do genuinely love Third Love. And I don't know that I've ever said this on the podcast, but I just shared it with Emily and I just realized I need to tell y'all this. If you are a chocolate sister and you are looking for your shade of nude, as in a bra, because if you get a nude that's not your skin tone, but then you wear a white shirt, it's going to like, it's not going to show nude under your shirt. And the reason why is because the contrast of your skin versus the bra is what you see. So you need something that's actually going to look like your skin. They have a bra in the shade nude that looks more melanated than not. So that's a plug.
You're going heavy black girl hands on this.
I am going heavy black girl hands because I do want you guys to know. So all you guys have to, all you need to know is that you can go onto their website. They offer more than 80 sizes, including their signature half cup sizes. You need to take your fit finders quiz. It only takes about 60 seconds, and it helps you identify your breast size and shape and finds the bra that fits your body. Third Love knows there's a bra for everyone. So right now they're offering our listeners 15% off their first order. You're just going to go to thirdlove.com/lovehour.
Love Hour.
Right now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. Again, that's thirdlove.com/lovehour for 15% off today. All right, so we're going to jump right in. Everybody ready? Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first thing what we want to talk about is, I think we're going to start with accelerators and brakes.
Yes.
Okay, and actually I'll allow you the space to kind of explain what are accelerators and what are brakes.
Sure. So the mechanism, the mechanism in your brain that governs sexual response is called the dual control mechanism. If it's called the dual control mechanism, how many parts does it have?
Two.
Ms. Nagowski.
Dr. Nagowski.
Dr. Nagowski. Put some respect.
So, and if I tell you that the first part is a sexual accelerator or gas pedal, the second part's going to be...
A brake.
The brake, right. So the accelerator is the part most of us are already familiar with.
Yeah.
It notices all the sex-related information in the environment. This is everything that you see, hear, smell, touch, taste, or crucially, think, believe, or imagine. And it sends the turn-on signal.
Think, believe, or imagine.
Yes.
That was good.
So fantasies or ideas, emotions, and it functions at a low level all the time, including right now. The fact that we are talking about sex vaguely is just a little bit of sex-related stimulation.
Yeah, so there's just a little bit, hopefully tonight.
Of turn-on sig. That actually is a thing that happens, is that people tend to have sex after they talk to me.
What you doing tomorrow? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, March, April, May.
So just a little bit, though.
A little bit of sex?
A little bit of sex-related information.
Oh,
so just a little bit of turn-on signal is being sent.
Got it.
Fortunately, at the same time, in parallel, your brakes are noticing all the good reasons not to be turned on right now. Everything that you see, hear, smell, touch, taste, think, believe, or imagine, that your brain codes as a potential threat. Okay. And it sends the turn-off signal. And both of them are functioning all the time.
This is actually make, you know how they say your brain's like a computer? That actually, that visual you just gave me that. Like, you know how RoboCop has that? Like, it's like, oh yes, kind of feeling sexy, but a little hungry. And break, you know, being hungry is more of a break. And then, you know, eventually does it be like whatever's wins more, your brain is like, all right, we are in the mood of this. So
exactly.
Your brain's just always assessing information. So some of that is your core beliefs. Is that the thing, believe or imagine? Like, oh, you know what? Like, Melissa's a churchy girl, so she's like, I think this, but, you know, what will my mother think? Or what will he think about me? And this is a break for yourself.
Yeah, right? If you get trained from early on in your life to believe that sex is something to be ashamed of or hidden or controlled, then that's teaching your brake to be on sort of all the time. So by the time you do get to a sexual situation, your brake is on because you've been taught that anything sex-related also hits the brakes.
So that's like a handbrake. You driving with your handbrake on.
In fact, there are actually two different types of brakes in our brains. There's the foot brake that responds to things that happen in the moment. My classic example for that is like you're in the middle of doing things and your grandmother walks into the room.
Oh,
brake slams on.
Slam on the brake.
Nah, yeah, nah. Just shuts. Unless that
so
is the
flexible.
Thing you are into.
I didn't know. I took you out of gymnastics.
Welcome to the Love Hour Podcast, Emily.
That was just a genuine laugh.
You don't know what the visual that was in my mind, because you don't know what my grandmother looked like. Who was I talking about?
The
brakes.
Yeah, the
so there is actually a handbrake.
Oh, really?
Which is more, the technical term is chronic inhibitory tone, where just like the brake is just sort of on all the time. And this seems to be, we're not sure if people are born with it or if it's something that's developed really early on in life. But for some people, if you try to drive somewhere with the handbrake on, you can maybe get where you want to go. It's going to use a lot more gas.
Yes.
And it might be slower. And you might start burning out the engine a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So learning how to release both brakes is the most important thing to be able to expand sexual pleasure. Because usually when people are struggling with anything related to sexuality, desire, arousal, pleasure, orgasm, the usual advice is to add stimulation to the gas pedal with role play and lingerie and porn and all that stuff. And that's great if you like it. If it's for you, go for it. But it turns out when people are struggling, it's very rarely because there's not enough stimulation to the accelerator. There's too much stimulation to the brake.
So let me further
this
analogy,
whole word.
Right? When you're driving your car, right, you've got to take it out from park to drive. So we've got some people who are smashing on the gas on a car that has in park, foot on the brake, handbrake up.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how much gas you put on that car.
We ain't going nowhere.
So you got to at least decrease the brake enough into the drive to feel that crunk.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So that actually makes sense. I feel like maybe subconsciously we were always taught lube, role play, nipple twists. you know, massage, you know,
and
man,
those things are great if you like them,
you know. But if you know, massage, we try to massage, you go like, oh, your booty sore. It's not, it is to me, you know what I mean? But if you're all breaks all the time,
oh yeah,
there's not enough gas in the world to get there. And I think that's, at least for the other person, the lower desire or the higher desire, to understand before you worry about the gas, work on the brakes.
Yes.
Because once your car, if you notice, if your car's in drive, no brakes, it'll move.
I was talking to another couple, actually, and the guy was really into car racing. And he's, like, latched onto this car metaphor. And he's like, so what you're saying is, like, my job is to be the pit crew to make sure that the driver has everything she needs. Like, as she approaches the car, right, like, all her needs are met. The car is polished and taken care of. And, like, she's got nothing to worry about when she shows up for the race. Yes.
If that's how you need to put it into your mind.
If that is the metaphor that works for you, yes.
Latch on, brother. That's
latch
it.
Latch on,
yes,
brother.
But it is about taking away the stuff that's hitting the brakes.
Yeah.
And almost all that stuff has nothing to do with that, with what's actually happening in bed. And in fact, if you try to do sexual stuff too early when the brakes are still on, you can make the brakes even worse. We've all had this experience where... I know tickling is not everybody's favorite thing, but suppose you're in like a hot and heavy, sexy, playful situation and your partner tickles you, that could potentially feel good and lead to other things. Mm-hmm. But if you're in the middle of a fight with that same certain special someone and they try to tickle you.
Can you imagine how mad you're like, girl, I'm sick of it. Coochie, what are you? Don't coochie cool me.
You kind of want to punch a person in the
face. Oh, yes, you do.
A little bit.
Because you would still laugh. Like, stop.
Yeah.
I'll sock you.
Right, you do laugh.
Like when a person tickles you too long, it's not funny anymore. I'll hit you now.
Yeah, like I'm done now.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's not funny.
So
it's not funny, okay? If that's all
it's the same sensation.
Right.
But the context is different, and so our perception of the sensation is different. So if you touch your partner's butt when they're not there for it, it's irritating and annoying, even if they really love it when they're already turned on and you touch their butt.
Context matters.
Context is everything.
That is great. That is so, man, that's good. Because early in our marriage, when I was trying to push Melissa closer to my sexual excitement level, whatever, I would say, but your body is responding. And I never clicked.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Just because your body is responding doesn't mean you are comfortable with it.
Right.
It just means your body's basically just registering that as sexual stimuli that I am, you know, scientifically wired to think this is good.
Right.
That doesn't mean I enjoy it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, there's actually three different, I'm going to get a little bit nerdy here.
Get soup, go on.
Three,
we're both nerds too, by the way.
Oh, good.
And our kids, it's just a whole family thing.
There's actually three related but separable systems in your brain. One is the pleasure system. This is the opioid system that notices when things feel good.
Yep.
Like when you taste sugar, the opioid system goes, yes, it feels good. Then there's the wanting system, which is this dopamine system that spans to all the different parts of your brain, and it motivates you to go pursue something. So pleasure comes first. Then desire comes in response to the pleasure, but they are separable systems.
Yeah.
And then the third system is the learning system, which, as you say, is like your body responds reflexively to something that it has learned is sex-related. The accelerator gets stimulated, and so there's blood flow to genitals.
Right.
But that does not necessarily mean there's actually a really big range. Some people, their genitals are a pretty accurate reflection of how much they want or like what's happening. For other people, their genitals are no kind of indicator.
Child, we on two separate pages. I feel like I'm that person. My body will say one thing and my mind is like, you should chill. Because we're not in the mood.
Because even though the accelerator is being stimulated by sex-related stimulation, the brakes are like, I don't care that it's sex related. There's all this other stuff happening. There's dishes in the sink and there's a pile of laundry and the kid needs to do homework and no.
Okay, so I have a question. This is good. Did you get all your things out?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. One of the questions that comes up quite often and one of the things that I wanted to talk about now, we have like our definitions of accelerators and brakes are number one, how do we identify what our accelerators are and then what our brakes are?
So many people have like an intuitive sense, like you can just list off the top of your head, like surely there are some things, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. are like, that's the thing that works for me, that's the thing that works for me. Here are things that definitely, stress is a big one, body image is a big one, cultural messages about sex are big things that hit the brakes. So you start with the stuff that's easy.
Yep.
Then you get to the stuff that it depends on the context, like in the right context, this kind of touch will work, or in the right kind of context, this is going to hit my brakes, but not under others. And once you get to the point where that's as far as you can go, I really recommend that, what?
She's having a mind orgasm.
I am having a mind orgasm. I'm having a mind freak because you just spoke to something that's very true for me. I always have a hard, and I think you've just, I'm always like, God, I have such a hard time like identifying what my accelerators or my brakes are. But I think for me, it's because everything is context related. Yeah. So I can have a list of like, these are things that are generally true for me. Mm-hmm. But you also have to add the context for me to be like, that's going to work today.
Exactly.
Because 9 times out of 10, can't be asking, and he always wants me to be like, this will work every single time. I'm
like, I need my foolproof. What's my foolproof?
But I'm not a foolproof person.
Foolproof is a larger context.
Foolproof is a larger
foolproof context. Foolproof is probably, now I'm just guessing, the Guess usual on me, girl. Characteristics of a context that allows a person's brain to interpret the world as a safe, fun, sexy, pleasurable place are low stress, high affection, extremely high trust, and explicitly erotic. You get the first three down. Man, so
that's a lot of work for the foolproof.
That's how hard foolproof is, especially if you have a person with a sensitive break. She needs to feel totally cared for and protected and supported and well-rested.
Well-rest? You know the biggest hater? Sleep.
I know.
Sleep be like, you think you getting something not tonight.
8 hours every day.
That sleep is big on the bricks. That's got Donkey Kong feet on the bricks. But sleep be like, she be like sex, but also sleep.
And here's the thing. Sleep is an actual biological drive. You can die from sleep deprivation.
So your brain is really the one hating on you.
Yeah, your brain is like, sleep is up here in my priority list right now.
Yeah.
And sex just gets pushed all the way down to the bottom.
Yeah.
Emily, this is Postmates.
This is Postmates. That was exciting. I have never seen a Postmates delivered before.
I mean, he didn't respect the cameras at all. Here's take the food. Shut up. Let me eat a little piece of that salmon. No, I'm joking. Seriously.
Oh, Emily, I think that was really good.
That was.
I had a moment.
I have had a lot of moments.
Oh, good.
As I think another thing is when it's not the way you process. Mm-hmm. I have what I'll call gas privilege.
Yeah.
It's not the way I process, so I'm assuming this is the way you should process because this is how I think.
Yeah.
So when you don't think like that, it's hard to understand someone who thinks like that because the way things register to me. You assume that for your partner and from, or if you have other sexual partners, you know, a lot of people who are older or previously married or whatever, and they've had other sexual partners and this exact thing works for this person. Why is it not mm-hmm. working for you? But what's worse is this worked with you, my wife, yesterday.
Yes.
We had a session, but today it's not working.
Today the context is different. Exactly.
It's not working.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a good thing to think about because at least me personally, I tend to bear the, for no reason of Melissa, bear the brunt of her entire sexual feeling, right? And if it's not working that day, it's like, Kevin, because you know, it's been your time. You didn't do it right. You ain't hitting it right and foreplay right and loot, whatever the case is. And it could be something from what you're saying. There's, first of all, way more factors than go into it than just foreplay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And a lot of media is just like, well, this is what you got to do. You got to do this and you got to do it for so long. And from what you're saying, even if you do that, if these other factors are there and more prevalent, it doesn't matter what you do here.
Yeah. What you do here can actually, again, make things worse if you do it in the wrong context.
Absolutely.
Because one of the things that you said is high trust.
Yes.
I want you to explain what you mean by that. I think this might be a really good gem if it goes to where I think you're going to say.
Okay. I don't know if it's what you think I'm going to say,
just
but
say.
I felt a little pressure
there's
for you
a great there's a relationship researcher and therapist named Sue Johnson.
Yeah, I shot my shot with her, Emily. I want her to be a guest on the podcast.
I love her so much.
Oh my goodness.
I love her so much. So she defines trust by the answer to this question, are you there for me? Mm-hmm. And R, of course, is an acronym for emotionally accessible, emotionally responsive, and emotionally engaged. Trust, if you know your partner is going to be there for you, is going to be accessible, responsive, and engaged, especially with something like sexuality that requires so much vulnerability. Like, you might be taking off some clothes. You might be letting them see parts of your body almost no one else will see.
Don't look at me, I'm hideous.
Touch parts of your body. Let them maybe put a part of their body inside yours.
Inside!
Maybe you're going to put a part of your body inside of them. Like,
or their mouth.
So vulnerable. It is so...
I was just eating a cookie. Now I'm eating another cookie.
Ladies. Like, and if you get to that really vulnerable situation and your partner's not 100% there for you, if their response is anything short of, yay, and wow, and thank you, then... it's going to hit the brakes and it's going to shut things down. Trust is so essential with sexuality.
Okay. So much. Okay. One thing that I wanted to ask is how much of this, I know they always laugh at me when I'm just kind of like.
She literally looked like she's.
I know. I get a lot of information overload. How much of this also carries outside of just that moment inside of the bedroom?
Literally everything.
Okay. Say more.
So your body carries memory of how much this partner has been. I will tell a story. Okay, so I travel a lot for work. If my partner and I did not schedule sex, sex would not happen. So
I travel a lot for work too.
What scheduling? It's important. But this one time I got back from a very long, stressful trip, and you know, it was Saturday at whatever time. And we had agreed, so we show up and we like get in the bed just like I tell everybody you're supposed to do. And the thing is, I was just so stressed and exhausted. I get there, put my arms around him, and I just cried and fell asleep. And probably there was some part of him that was like, But you know, he didn't let me know that. He didn't show me that at all. He just was really patient. He stayed there in the bed with me while I slept for like half an hour.
Oh.
And then we went and had dinner. And even though we didn't have sex then, it did build, like, he was so there for me. He was so supportive. He was so non-judgmental. He didn't put his, like, pouty needs, like, well, you said we were going to have sex and we didn't get to have sex. Like,
he just, I mean, he could have said you weren't a woman of your word. He didn't.
Right, yeah. No, I, in good faith, showed up and tried, and my body was just like, I can't. But you know what? Because he was so wonderful for me and so supportive in that, it put like money in the trust bank account.
So I love that
it, like,
analogy.
It made me more ready to.
Like, you didn't like, get none
time,
today,
but
boy,
you set the stage.
You set the
for
stage
me
for
being
other
ready for in the future to know for sure. So my body carries the memory of how trustworthy he is, how non-judgmental he'll be if things don't work out today.
Yeah,
which actually makes it more likely that things are going to work out today.
That is.
I think that
body
is
carries
so...
them. You are. I see why you do this full time. You're very good.
We were actually talking about how the body holds the memory. Esther Perel has talked about it. Bessel van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score, is the book for any trauma survivor. It's very intense, but it's amazing.
That is really good. And that even Melissa and I, we've had days where it just doesn't work out, and sometimes it's just better to say, you know what, today's not our day.
Yeah,
it's like a football team. Like, you go out there with the best of intentions to win and you throw three interceptions and fumble the ball, he's like, man, guys, we
today was not our day.
Is not our day, you know, we go back, hustle up, you know what I mean? But I think what you said that I really like is, even though it didn't end the way it was supposed to, your body now carries the memory of something positive and supportive. Mm-hmm. So it may not have been your day for sex, but it was your day for trust and emotional support, which is more important to the overall sexual health of your relationship.
Yes. I worked with a couple, actually. I was running a weekend workshop, and a couple, like, stole me at lunch and pulled me aside for an hour. They had a new baby, and they had not had sex since the baby was born, like, a year ago.
Babies suck for that.
Babies really do.
They're so selfish.
Drain the sex out of a relationship for a significant amount of time.
They don't wipe
their own butts.
They just sit there and...
They can't run away from predators if somebody chases them.
Yeah, you leave a baby on the ground, he'll be there.
They smell weird. If you leave a baby on the ground, it'll just freeze overnight because they can't even thermoregulate. Babies.
You trash human, you haven't learned how to thermoregulate, you piece of crap.
If babies were not so cute, we would leave them by the side of the road.
Yes. That's all they are, is cute.
Yes.
Freaking jerks.
It's a really powerful tool,
they grow
tool,
up and
though.
Get mustaches and Adam's apples, and they call you cringe when you do the shoot dance.
That's our 13-year-old. Continue your thought.
I figure. I was like,
I know,
oh, right,
Kevin's
they had a baby, they
hadn't
had sex for like a year. And I was like, okay, so what has to happen is you have to take the pressure off. You have to decide you are not going to have sex for 3 months. It had already been 12 months. In fact, longer than that, because her desire had gone down as the pregnancy had advanced. And his response when I said, you're taking sex off the table for 3 months so that you can create space for rebuilding your like sensual connection without sex. And he goes, ugh. And I was like, so pause a moment. How do you think it feels for her when she sees you make that face? And he was like, So I asked her, how does it feel for you when you see him make that face? And she says, it feels like I'm broken in the problem and I should just have sex with him to get it over with.
Which is good advice.
Right? And the whole point was he didn't want to have sex that she was just doing to get it over with just to satisfy him.
Yeah.
He wanted her to want him. It's really hard to want somebody who's like, ugh, when are you going to want sex?
It's so much pressure.
It is.
And then that pressure is internalized to the whole idea of sex. And now I just want to stay as far away
situation.
From the whole situation.
And actually,
so it's counterproductive.
If
Continue.
We switch it from desire and go to erection, if we get like a spotlight on a penis and are like, get an erection. What's the matter with you? Where's your erection?
Hey,
get an erection. Hey, get an erection.
Wait, don't. Right? You're
exactly.
looking at it. Leave me alone.
Exactly.
Too much pressure.
Exactly. So it's exactly the same sort of thing. Where's your desire? Why can't you just desire me? Why can't you just desire
I'm
sex? Why can't we just
it.
Have the sex? Like, how about you back off?
Yeah.
Then so maybe. True. And then we have to like very gradually make our way back to each other. And this is where it gets complicated, because it's easy enough. Like if you haven't made a mess of your sexual connection, you can find your way back to each other. Like
right.
if you have been kind and compassionate and gentle and supportive when your partner hasn't been there because it wasn't your day.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's easy to find your way back to each other. But so often when there are disconnections in sexuality, one or both people takes it personally and feels rejected
Absolutely.
Or feels pressured
yep.
or like they're a failure because
yes.
they don't want sex or because they're a failure because they can't convince their partner to
yes.
have sex. And there's all these difficult feelings
late?
Building up.
What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I'm in charge of the turkey, actually.
Man.
I do a spatchcock and dry brine.
There's so much pressure that we put on ourselves.
Yes.
That may not even be the other person or anything like that.
And it's not even necessarily like a sex issue. Like,
right.
It's just all these difficult feelings standing between you and this person you love and respect and want
right.
to have a connection with. So before you can get to the sexual connection, you have to cope with all the feelings that are between
feelings.
You. Which is very hard work.
Yeah.
And we're often not equipped.
It's a totally different skill set
totally
from
different skill
the
set.
Actual having of the sex.
Than the, yes.
Having
and,
of the sex.
Oh my gosh. I hope that you guys are like getting all of these points because we covered like a lot.
We did. It's
just
a nutrient rich episode.
Yeah, it is. But one of the things.
Kale.
Yeah, it is kale. Yeah, it's
kale
very
for your balls.
Dense in nutrition. But one of the things I thought was so important was the idea, I've said this before and you just really, really said it good, was the importance of all of those things that happen outside of the bedroom
right.
before we even get here.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope we've helped. I know you just helped me really. I am most definitely one of those people that just simply doesn't have a this or that, this works, this, that doesn't. And that's
Very
it consistently.
Very few people are. It is a myth. That people have like, well, just touch me here or don't touch me that way. And this is like the secret key that no matter what else is going on, that's the thing that's going to turn me on. It's very rare to meet a person like that.
Inhale, exhale, you guys. Inhale, huge exhale.
Not only are you normal, it is very rare that even somebody does have that.
What do you
that's
think
feel,
is...
makes me feel good too, because I'm like, man, I thought it was me.
What do you think is feeding those, like, why do we believe this? Like, what do we hold on to You don't have to go deep because that was a whole deep breath.
She took the biggest of breaths, like, oh, let me tell you.
When the answer boils down to patriarchy, like, there's a story to tell, and just the fact is that we have been trained in a way of thinking about sexuality that's based on a mainstream pornographic narrative of the way men are supposed to work. And in this narrative, and this has been true for centuries in the West, women basically are like men, only a little broken. And the extent to which women are different from men is the way that women are broken. And we need to, like, medicate them or treat them or do something to make them like the men. And even the model of masculine sexuality we have isn't a true model of sexuality. It is, so part of my job as a sex educator is to expose myself to as wide a variety of sexually explicit media as possible, so that when people talk to me about stuff, I do not react with any sort of like disgust or horror. I can just be like,
so somebody's like, I saw Black Tail Volume 6, and you was like, let me tell you, I got Volume 7.
I can just be like, that's the thing people watch.
Yeah.
So I have read and seen all the porn, every porn, porn you don't want to think about, including antique. All the porn.
This is the notebook I created. All the porn, Emily Nagowski. Doctor.
All the porn things.
Doctor Emily Nagowski.
PhD. So where I see the masculinity script is in early 19th century English language porn. It's all really terrible. Don't read it. But, like, this is the script of men being instantaneously responsive, to, like, wanting sex all the time, taking all the sex they can get. Women's consent doesn't matter. Women's pleasure doesn't matter. If a woman's body responds, that means that she wants and likes what's happening. And it's all just a fiction. It's a script we have absorbed without even knowing what the source was.
Yeah.
So true.
If we knew what the source was, we'd be like, oh, well, I reject everything from that source because, ew.
I want to tell you what I reject. I reject sore feet. And sometimes when you are standing all day, especially if you are a doctor or you're a hairstylist or any of these jobs, even a bank teller, and you're on your feet all day, you understand the importance of a good pair of shoes that makes you feel like you are walking on air. And that's why I want to tell you about Rothy's. I have Rothy's. I have, like, the black canvas shoes. And I literally, when I put them on, I said, if I were a hairdresser, these would be the shoes I would wear, because they are so lightweight. They are durable, and they just make you feel like you're walking on air. They're really great shoes for like traveling and stuff like that, because they're quick slip-ons. And like I said, you running up and through the airport, and we've almost missed many of flights, and you want a good pair of shoes for that. Rothy's are great because they are stylish, sustainable, comfortable, and washable. That's everything you need in one pair of shoes. They are the perfect flat on-the-go shoes for your life. Check out all the amazing styles available right now at rothys.com/lovehour. Go to rothys.com, that's rothys.com/lovehour, to get your new favorite flats. Comfortable style and sustainability, these are the shoes you've been waiting for. Head to rothys.com/lovehour today. In my book club, there were a few people that actually tried these shoes out, and they really loved it. I can't remember what her job was, though, but it was something that stands on your feet. Okay, we're moving on. I also want to tell you about First Leaf. If you like award-winning wine, you're guaranteed to love First Leaf. It's 2020. Everyone is in celebration mode. You want a great wine to cheers to during your celebration, whether that's red wine, white wine, sweet wine, dry wine. They have the whole gamut, and they allow you to test and try your palate to expand what you like, so you're not just in a very nice restaurant asking for Moscato during your entree, because people will judge you. We've done that before. And the lady was like, oh, you po' thing. We ain't gonna give you that. I'm gonna give you a real one, okay? Sign up with my link and you'll get an exclusive intro offer. 6 bottles of wine for only $29.95 plus free shipping. Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/love.
Love.
That's 6 bottles of wine for only $29.95 plus free shipping. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/love.
Love.
Okay.
Before we go back.
Okay.
Emily has a Black Lives Matter
Emily is amazing.
I didn't even recognize it.
Sorry about that.
I didn't apologize.
I was like, it's just the thing I wear every day. Sorry.
Also, I wanted to go back to the patriarchy thing you said.
That was so smooth. I really thought you were going to talk about how sore feet hits your brakes.
She's the master. We're all in so competition. Good. Me, her, and Doughboy at Segways. Melissa leads the league.
Everyone is talking about the one from last week. It was amazing.
Oh, my gosh. So I was reading about sex, sex conversion therapy, something, I don't know, back when I was in college. And I didn't realize the term hysteria.
Oh, yeah.
That term was hysterectomy. It was like if a woman liked sex, they called her hysterical.
Right.
Mm. And that's what they would do, hysterectomies on women who like sex. So I don't know about the early porn. Was it like written porn? Because you said early 19th. Was that video? Or
in the 19th century, like the 1800s?
So it was written.
Yeah. Hold on, let me do my math.
I thought you were talking about like 1990.
So think like Jane Austen era.
Got it.
Oh, like Victorian era.
Earlier even than that.
Earlier than Victorian, was porn written?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first thing we do with any technology is write porn. Like, create sexually explicit media.
We got laser disc. I got laser.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things I wanted to kind of round out this topic on accelerators and brakes is funneling down a little bit and talking about how to actually... Are y'all done?
I'm sorry.
Y'all are children. Child. Joshua is laughing.
No, I'm a child. I may not know.
Hysterically.
The patriarchy.
Ayo. I feel like for lower desire people, that your brakes consume so much real estate in your mind that it's hard to try to focus in. And forgive me if I'm not using the right words, okay? But try to like focus in, zoom in, or tap on those accelerators. So can you give tips to those people? Me, Emily, give a tip to me.
I am the people.
Yeah, I am the people. The people is me. About how to like shrink that part of your brain and expand the part of your brain that is going to focus on your accelerators.
So as far as the research is concerned, there's not a way to like change the sensitivity of your brake. So if you have a sensitive brake, you just have a sensitive brake.
That's actually helpful because I feel like I've been working against myself this whole time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Welcome really your brake as it is and look at the things that activate your brake and change the context, the situation. Like whatever on that brake you have, whatever on that list you have control over, get rid of that stuff. Some of it is easy stuff. Some of it is like being worried about being interrupted. Some of it is your feet are cold. There's literally research that shows that if you put socks on.
I will buy socks with clamps on them.
So I know a couple who, when they found this research, I was like, yeah, you'd like double the chances of having an orgasm if you put socks on. You've got
double the chances.
So the way they found, so in order to do research on what happens in the brain during orgasm, you have to have research participants who are willing to masturbate to orgasm in an fMRI machine. Oh. Have you ever had a brain scan and an fMRI machine?
Like Professor X? When he has celestial?
Sort of like that. So like there's this thing that you're like lying down in this cold medical room alone with this thing around your head that's going dung 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 dung, taking lots of pictures of what's happening in your brain.
Yeah.
It is the least sexy context in the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
Even among the people who volunteer for this study to try, only half actually get to orgasm. But one Dutch researcher found that if he let his participants keep their socks on, because otherwise they're just wearing a medical johnny, he doubled the likelihood that a person could have an orgasm. Why? Because their feet were cold. It was distracting them. You put socks on, you release that at break, and it's enough to get them across the threshold. Because the neurological marker for orgasm is not like an increase in the accelerator, but a sudden dropping away of everything hitting the brakes. So,
wow.
Whoa.
Emily Nagowski, Dr. Emily. Wow.
Sometimes it's easy, right?
Yeah.
When I told this
and
to
our room is always cold.
A couple.
Just the way our house is set up.
The woman had cold feet, and the guy liked the sort of thigh high kind of look. Mm-hmm. So she got wool thigh highs.
And socks?
Yes. Wool thigh high socks. Sockdreams.com.
And it helped him visually and helped her warmth wise?
Yeah.
What was the website?
Right? Sockdreams.com.
I want socks with nothing else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thigh-high wool socks with nothing else? Heck yeah. He actually also really likes it when she wears his shirts, so that combination was
that
also
that man told his wife successful. I want thigh-high socks had nothing. She was like, sockdreams.com.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wool.
Wool. Wool is sick.
It's
you know how warm your feet would be, though?
I know. My feet are cold right now. Okay, so so
sometimes it's simple. Sometimes it's grit on the sheets. You change the sheets. Sometimes you're worried because there's one more dish in the dishwasher. Do the have your partner go do the last dish. Because then they come back and you're like, I'm almost there.
Hold on. Could you just go wash that dish?
Sometimes it is the sexiest thing somebody can do.
Oh, yeah. He ain't even got back to the bedroom yet.
Okay, just what about the hard stuff?
So the hard stuff. Suppose it's body image stuff. Mm-hmm. This, Amelia's my sister. Mm-hmm. We call it the bikini industrial complex. Okay. There is this cultural pressure for women's bodies to conform to a very specific aspirational ideal.
Yes.
And we have all been taught to hate and criticize and judge and feel terrible about the body parts that don't conform to the bikini industrial complex's ideal. And if your body, if you feel that way about your body, is you're feeling critical of your body, is that hitting the accelerator?
Girl, no.
It's just hitting the brakes. So there's one of the best evidence-based interventions is very simply to like stand in front of a mirror naked, look at what you see there, and write down everything you see that you like.
I did this.
Did you?
Remember, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, tell us.
But in my book where I talk about my, I told you, Emily, I be knowing stuff and I just don't be knowing stuff. But in my book, I told you about the campaigns that I went through. One of the first things, I suffered with a lot of body image issues. I hated, you know, being this chocolate skin and just a lot of different things, low self-esteem, all of the things. So one of the first things I started to do, I call it my love on campaign. I found one thing every day that I decided I liked. I looked in the mirror and decided to love on that feature and concentrate on that. It's what got me into makeup. I decided I liked my eyes. I think I have almond shaped eyes and I think they're so nice. And I was like, I'm going to do things to accentuate that which I like about myself. Mm-hmm. And that's what got me into makeup. I started wearing eyeshadow and, you know, whatever I could do to like accentuate the one thing I decided I liked about myself.
And it is an inoculation against the ongoing cultural messages, because just because you found a thing you feel good about, then you're going to go out into the world and there's going to be a magazine at the CVS checkout, or mm-hmm. I mean, just as a totally hypothetical example, you're trying on clothes for a job interview with your mom and you're like, this dress fits me with my body being the shape that it is right now, and your mom goes, but you're going to lose the weight, right?
We inhale, we exhale.
Totally hypothetical.
Totally hypothetical.
My mom is a wonderful human being.
Yes.
And my sister and I grew up watching her, you know, try on clothes at the store and crying at what she saw in the mirror. Mm. And what she saw in the mirror when she was 42 is very much what we see in the mirror now that mm-hmm. we are 42. Mm-hmm. So a second intervention is this game Amelia and I call the new hotness game. Like Will Smith from Men in Black 2, yep. Old and Busted, New Hotness. Mm-hmm. When we find something that, like, whatever it is, whether it conforms with the bikini industrial complex or not, we take a picture and we text it to each other and just say New Hotness. Whatever it is that's going on, if it is new sweatpants or pajamas, New Hotness.
Right? I love it.
So, again, it's inoculation, because you're not going to stop getting those messages right. about right. how, like, broken and wrong you are, but you can remind yourself over and over again. It's great when it comes from a partner, but it's, I mean, do we even believe it when it comes from our partner?
I was going to say, I feel like it's the most empowering when you say it to yourself.
It has to come from you.
It has to come from you.
Yeah.
You can't, sometimes you don't even trust that they're being genuine. They're just saying that. They're just saying that to get something. Right. They don't believe that. And none of it really matters if you don't believe it about yourself.
Yeah. Right. That's it.
Exactly.
So good.
Trauma stuff. Especially if it's a history of sexual trauma. What has happened is when sex has been used as a weapon against you, your brain learns that anything that is sex-related is also a threat. So anything that hits the accelerator also hits the brake simultaneously. And treatment is a process of systematic, gentle, graded exposure is the technical term, which means that you let yourself experience just a little bit of touch and arousal in a safe context, and your brain gradually learns, oh, I can experience this level of arousal, and I am still safe. And then you do that, so you do that every day for a week, and the next week you go to a higher level of arousal, and you let your brain, this is what they do in therapy. It's highly effective. People heal from sexual trauma. They don't have to live with it forever. People recover all the time. And
when you just said people heal, I felt people inhale, exhale. Okay. That was a powerful moment to tell someone that there is a pathway to healing, because I feel like a lot of times people aren't going out to get help. And so you often feel like, I'm going to be this way forever. There's no way I can be on the other side of this. So I hope that helps someone. I felt it. I haven't been through anything like that, but I can imagine someone being like, tears
and falling. Trauma shows up in so many different ways in sexual behavior. It may show up in a person as like, I don't want to engage in anything because all sex feels dangerous to me. It can also show up in, I'm going to have a whole lot of sex because I'm trying to like reclaim this thing in my body. So there's a lot of like doing sex without necessarily feeling pleasure because their body is still in a state of panic.
Wow.
So good.
So it can look like a lot of different things, and it, and all of them are just normal reactions to a very broken, bad, like that thing should not have happened to the person. And your body's just trying to cope with having your body used against you as a weapon. And when we can allow our bodies to experience the pleasurable sensations that are our birthright in a safe context.
Birthright? That's biblical.
It's actually Good Vibrations is one of the original feminist sex toy stores, and their slogan is pleasure is your birthright.
I like that.
But I mean, we're given these bodies. Mm-hmm. We only get the one.
Only get the one.
And it has the capacity to do amazing things. Mm-hmm. And the most amazing things our bodies do happen when we are in connection with another person. We cross what scientists call a neurological bridge out of your sense of individual identity into a sense of deep connection and embodiment that is the shared body of the two people.
Oh, wow.
People who experience optimal sexual experiences describe, so optimal sexual experiences are basically, there's a sex therapist and researcher named Peggy Kleinplatz who just sort of asked the world, so who self-identifies as having really great sex? And so she talked to people who have really great sex. First of all, the age at which they first experienced the great sex, any guess?
55
on average.
Grandma, yes. That's why you didn't come to my basketball game.
Shut up.
You having good sex? Wow.
Didn't even need the gymnastic lessons.
That was a great callback. That was a great callback.
Well, if you're gonna talk about grandma,
high five and Sally problematic too.
The hope that it gives us is it's never too late.
Wow.
So when you ask people, okay, so how did you get there? Step number one is they had to forget everything they thought they were supposed to believe about sex, gender, bodies, love, and trust.
Dang.
Start from scratch.
Clean slate.
Yeah, because all of those things are barriers making you feel like you're supposed to conform to some like social behavior, script, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So abandon all that and just be like, what feels good in my body? What feels good for my partner? How do we maximize our access to the pleasure that we share when we are together?
You know what? So as a man, a black man, and I use those specifically, we're taught to be so masculine. Anything outside of the rim of masculinity is gay, right?
Mm-hmm.
So say you like a little gooch touch. It's close to your butt. It ain't your butt. It's a little gooch. The sensor of masculinity be like, you can't like that. That's gay. Whether your body is liking it or not, that's gay. If you do anything other than like man-dominated sex.
Yeah, penis in vagina, I'm allowed to say.
In vagina. Even I was watching The Sopranos. They killed men for eating out their wives. Like, that was considered weak. In Italian culture, like, you're weak, you know, blah, 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 if you do this and that. So much of that is internalized. I remember I used to think, you know, eating a girl out was weak and blah, blah, blah. And then I was in high school, and these dudes were talking about it. They're like, nah, you got to do that. You got to please your woman. I was like, oh, maybe I did not know. Obviously, I wasn't even having sex at this time. But it's crazy how much stuff you retain before you even start having sex. I was like, are you weak if you do that? Oh, no, this is cool now. Like, butt stuff, like eating butt. I don't know if you're aware of this. But I remember forever.
I am aware of eating butt.
I was going to say, she knows all the things.
Yes.
The transition.
All the porn, remember?
Yeah, all the porn. So I remember Spoken Reasons was actually the first person I remember, a black guy, who was like, I eat butt. Oh, yeah, I eat it. You know, and he was like, only in the shower, though. Right? This was like 2012. And people were like, you crazy? That's a butt. That's this and that. And then Charlamagne was like, oh, no, I eat butt. And then a couple of people were like, men were like, I get my butt ate. 50 Cent said about Vivica Fox. And now it's like, oh, yeah, if you don't do, you know what I mean? Like, so that's just an example to me of how, like, society's opinion on something can shape your personal mind. Yeah. So I like the idea that you say of just erase everything you ever thought of.
Yeah.
The marriage bed is undefiled.
Because in both of those scripts, it's you're doing it wrong if you do it. And then it flips and is like, you're doing it wrong if you don't do it.
Right.
And the thing is, you're not doing it wrong. You do it if you like it.
You don't even know if you like it because you don't know what is you and what is society.
How do you know what pleasure feels like in your body? A lot of people get to their first sexual experiences really having no idea what pleasure even feels like, women in particular.
Yeah.
No, because we're trained to be the givers, to be that our pleasure does not matter. What matters is the other person is satisfied and happy.
She gave it up. He took her virginity.
Yeah, exactly.
Patriarchy.
Every time. That's the answer. And so when women get to their first sexual experience, they have no idea what pleasure even feels like. And so when your partner is doing the thing and goes, do you like that? Because he's a good person who wants to make sure you're having a good time. But he goes, do you like that? And your only possible answer is...
Your voice for him is funny. Do you like that?
Yeah, that's my husband sounds like. That's not what he sounds like.
Melissa always does a funny interpretation of what men sound like, too. It's just funny.
The only possible answer is,
Yeah, because ego stroking, if you say no, he's going to be like, my ego.
You have just like, it is the worst thing you can say is that your partner is not literally the best sex you've ever had in your life right now.
Right. Exactly right.
So like what can, and she, so she's just like, I guess that's what pleasure feels like. I guess this is what sex is. I guess when they talk about the pleasure of sex, this is what they mean.
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of like overcoming and exploring and figuring out what even does feel good, which means first creating the context that lets your brain feel pleasure, which leads us to the last like really big breaks hitter, which is the cultural shame piece.
Ooh.
I got a tweet story from someone who read Come As You Are who told me she watched her adult brother changing his newborn daughter's diaper.
Okay.
And when she was all clean and ready for the new diaper, dad comes back over, he goes and gets the diaper, comes back and finds that his daughter is touching her genitals. And he goes, don't touch that.
Mm. As a baby.
Little baby infant. Like, yeah. And she's not going to remember this moment, right? Yeah. But it's going to accumulate with countless other similar moments until by the time she gets to be an adult, she doesn't know why, but that part of her body feels like it doesn't even belong to her.
Oh, my God.
So she has to go through the process of reconnecting with this part of her physical body, her anatomy, actually does belong to her. And she needs to practice paying loving, kind, compassionate attention to that body part in order to like disentangle the knot of shame that she was taught to just replace her genitals with that shame.
Yeah, you gotta pet that cat. Let that
the
cat know
disentanglement it's okay. of the knot of shame.
That's what you heard, and I heard pet that cat.
I know. That was such a beautiful like phrasing, because I was explaining or sharing this with Emily, and if you've listened to any bit of the podcast, you know this as well, that I started using the menstrual cups, the menstrual disc, and at that time I had didn't even really truly recognize how much shame I had internalized about my own body that I was struggling so much to like insert this thing correctly because I didn't want to touch or become familiar with my own body. It was a part of me that wasn't a part of me. Like, it's on me, but it's not anything I'm familiar with. And that part of myself, literally, I had to do the work of disentangling that knot of shame. All of that messaging that I had internalized to be true, that became a part of the fiber of who I am, was now impacting how I live my everyday life. And I had to undo that. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of work.
It's no fair. You didn't get to choose what messages you were taught about your body. It is your body.
not fair.
It's not fair.
There's a lot of anger that women have to like allow themselves to move. Feelings are tunnels. You have to go all the way through them to get to the light at the end. You have to let your body release all like the frustration and rage and helplessness and feelings of despair and isolation.
Oh, you hit a neural network. I am now making room for tears. I now have feelings. Oh man, that was so good. I feel like I have gone through this tunnel and I've been angry. I don't want to cry. I got to do this ad too,
but I'm going to tell you,
don't rub my back. I don't like it. But I want, and but I am a toucher, which is odd.
Dude, don't touch her though. She punched Josh last episode.
One of the things,
talk to HR.
Shut up, Kevin. One of the things that happens to me is, God, dog it, I lost my train of thought. But while we're talking about learning and training, I want to tell you about Skillshare. They are amazing. Legit, this is amazing. So last week, I will listen to the How to Develop Healthy Habits. First of all, one of the things that I thought was so good, it's like an hour and a half like segment. And one of the things the guy was talking about, I sent it to Joshua. Joshua listened to a piece of it. But he was talking about progress over perfection. And one thing that I've often said is that perfection becomes an excuse into paralysis. So we want everything to be so perfect that we don't end up doing anything.
Yep.
And what he talks about is doing it anyway without perfection, you end up learning that you were never going to do it perfect anyway. You have to go through the motion in order to learn, and then you grow, you evolve, and you get better.
Oh, yeah.
And that was so encouraging to me because there are so many things I want to do, so many things that you want to do, I'm sure. And oftentimes you don't feel good enough.
Yep.
But you'll never be good enough if you don't at least start.
Yes.
Whole word. Where's the tambourine? And so that's what I want to tell you about Skillshare. They have tons of classes that allows you to explore and deepen existing passions and get lost in the creativity with Skillshare's online classes. What you find just may surprise and inspire you. I definitely left that little segment inspired. Skillshare is an online learning community where millions come together to take the next step in their creativity journey with thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people on topics such as illustration, design, photography, video, freelancing, and more. Skillshare is a proud sponsor of the Love Hour. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/lovehour and get 2 free months of premium membership.
Premium.
Because we only offer the best over here. That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started and join today by heading to skillshare.com/lovehour. One more time. That's skillshare.com/lovehour. One thing we want to continue the conversation. We were talking about brakes and accelerators. And one thing that I wanted to kind of put a button, I guess, on that topic was for those people that have very sensitive brakes, how do you overcome the brake sensitivities?
Right.
Okay.
So where we were was saying that it's not that you can change the mechanism in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do is know what your brain responds to and change the context as much as you can.
We talked about a
whole bunch of things that are typically hitting the brake. Some of them are easy, some of them more complex. You can also gradually shape your brain's sensitivity so that it learns that that's not actually a threat anymore.
Ooh, okay.
And that's the process of like graded exposure,
like I was talking about with
trauma.
Okay.
That's so. Another thing, a really important strategy for people with very sensitive that kind of like foot brake, that just if there is a stray fingernail, just the brake slam on and everything shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
That's if you have a sensitive brake, that's a normal response.
Okay.
A thing people do wrong in that moment is decide that sex is ruined. They're terrible people and they can never do anything sexual, and they start piling on the self-criticism and the judgment.
Mm-hmm.
The thing to do is just know, oh, that was my sensitive brake getting hit by the stray fingernail or the stray thought or the stray sound from the other side of the door, and like let that be true and focus on your partner for a minute while your brake relaxes and is like, you can forget about that thing. And it will all come back if you just don't criticize and judge. You let it be true. You notice your brain's desire to criticize yourself and be like, hello, self-critical thoughts. I can have you literally any other time. Right now, what I'm going to do is pay attention to the pleasurable things that are happening in the here and now. I'm not going to judge and criticize.
You confronted your self-critical thought and said, I'll meet you later.
Yeah.
But not now.
Yeah, now is not the moment
I'm
for
having
us.
Sex right now.
Yeah. I'm too busy experiencing pleasure.
One thing that I actually really like about this idea is because what I heard you say is I don't have to wallow in that moment. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think a lot of times what happens in that moment is you do feel like the moment's ruined. I have to give it all up. And I now need to focus solely on this break. All of my attention goes right. from whatever was really good and happening here to this break. And that's it. Everything else is out the window. And what you're actually saying is that's not the case. Mm-hmm. There is a decision, and that's part of it too. You don't always feel that you have the power to make a decision. You feel like you are held captive to this sensitive break, to the noise, to the fingernail, to the dishes, to the stress, to whatever, and you have to. And what you're saying is that's just not true. You just have to train yourself
right.
to focus on something else.
The thing that holds people captive is their judgment of the mechanism. If they so there's your feelings, there's what's actually going on in the here and now. And then there's your meta feelings. There's how you feel about how you feel. So how you feel about the fact that your sensitive break got hit is what makes the difference. So your sensitive break got hit. That's a thing that happens. You can welcome that, allow that to be true, because your sensitive break is there for a reason. It's there to do a job. It's there to keep you safe in case things are
that
not okay.
That was encouraging.
Like how gorgeous is it that you were granted this mechanism to be an alert signal in case things are not okay? That sensitive break is also the thing that's going to keep you alert in case, like, your kids are in distress, or if, like, you know, you're going to notice if something's not okay with your partner because that break is so sensitive. Mm. What a gift that is. And yeah, it can interfere with stuff, but that's okay. How you feel about it is what matters, your reaction to it. The only thing that holds you captive is when you believe your brain is supposed to be one way and it isn't that way, and so therefore you are broken. You're not. If you can release that script and allow yourself to be who you are, before we started recording, we were talking about a different way of approaching. If people are struggling with any aspect of their sexuality, whether it's having a sexual break that makes their sexuality function not in the way the script tells them it's supposed to, or if they're recovering from any form of sexual trauma, I always end up turning back to Rumi, who is this medieval Sufi poet. Who
also Beyonce's daughter's name. Okay, continue.
Rumi? Really?
Yeah. Rumi and Sir Carter.
Rumi and Sir Carter.
Is it R-U-M-I?
Yes.
Yeah. You're genuine surprise.
I truly didn't know that.
I hate that that's how I know that name, but this is my truth, Emily. This is my truth.
And the thing is, she probably really is named after the Sufi poet.
Yeah. Oh, she is. Absolutely.
So what he writes is there is a special kind of hope given to those who hurt. There's a special kind of magic given to those who hurt so hard they cannot hope. Ooh. The hopers would feel slighted if they knew. Dig a way out through the bottom to the ocean. And how I interpret that is the special magic given to people who hurt so hard they cannot hope is that we have a superpower to be able to sink down, dig a way out. You instead of fighting hard to swim to shore, instead of like clinging onto some rock, you soften into the ocean and you allow yourself to breathe underway. And you go all the way down. You let your body sink down. You surrender to it. You allow it to be true. This will not often be an easy or comfortable experience because you spent so hard. It's like if you come in from the cold, the process of warming up your hands really hurts.
Yes, it does.
Man. This is coming in from the cold, allowing yourself to live in your body as it is. Oh. And it's a kind of magical experience that people who haven't had to fight for everything will never get to experience. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing. It's not always fun. But on the other side of it is access to sexuality like you've never known before.
Emily, that was a powerful.
Emily's
that was powerful.
Had a triple double today's Love Hour. Very few triple doubles. People had like 30 point games. You went for 35, 20, and 10.
I don't know what any of that means.
That was powerful because number one, The exhausting
part. Was it a sport?
Yes.
It was a sport.
Okay.
It's basketball.
Sports ball.
Sports ball.
She said, I don't know what any of that means.
Sports ball. Felt like a compliment.
It was a compliment.
It was definitely a compliment.
It means you had an overall great episode in more areas than one.
Thank you.
I mean, you have, this is just like, this probably, it's hard for even me and Melissa and the viewers watching live on Patreon or as this aired. This is so much good information, it's probably impossible to take it in one listen.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, each section I could probably listen to, you know what I mean, over and over to make sure I got all that, because there's so much that, like, it's kind of like we as kids, we were taught milk does a body good, right? And we didn't realize that that was paid for by dairy farmers to help milk production. We really believed it was a, like a...
Even our parents believed
your
it.
Your parents, doctors, teachers, everyone who tells you things are right, tells you you should drink your milk to have strong bones and fight against osteoporosis. Later on, you grow up and realize, oh, this is just, that was a marketing thing.
Yeah.
You're like, what? To this day, even though I know better, I still see a gallon of whole milk red in the grocery store, and I'm like, if I drink that, it'll help my bones.
Oh, I sing the jingle. The literal, yes. I remember the song.
Not that black people are lactose intolerant, that milk, you know what I mean? All this stuff that we've learned after, I still am like, milk doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so imagine that with sexuality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You literally know, everything that we're taught in the mainstream, literally everything is wrong.
Right. So, wow. And most people are, with 36?
Yeah.
Just figuring this out, like, you may have been taught a wrong way, or the way our minds about sex is shaped is based off pre-Victorian era porn.
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because I was reading about the Greek, like, Greek sex was totally different.
Totally different.
Totally, what was masculine, feminine, they had orgies, they was out here totally different. And
how many genders are there? It depends what culture you're in.
Doesn't matter. Even in Game of Thrones, man, my boy, if you watch Game of Thrones, you'll get this. Pedro Pascal Oberyn, so he was, it's okay, I'm going to get there. He was
Emily
super masculine.
Doesn't watch Game of, I love you.
Emily's too busy to keep it up on shows. But in this culture, there was no line between sexuality between men and women. It didn't make you, like, strong or weak. So he was a great warrior, and he had sex with men and women. Like, in certain cultures, sex is different. Certain religions, like, are more free. So much of this is shaped by forces that are outside of your control. And I feel empowered for myself and Melissa, because I have to do work as well to kind of tear away all that was pre-built and kind of rewire to, you know, what is right for myself and for Melissa. Because there's some stuff that I'd be like, nope, can't do that because I'm a man. But what if you like it? What if you like it?
Yeah.
And it's like, who's going to see you? What is this fear that if I like this, somehow my friends will find, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if anybody else has it, but in the back of my mind, it's like, what if people found out that what Melissa did to me? What if they knew it when she did? I like it. You know what I mean? What if I even allow my own self to enjoy something that I feel like I shouldn't enjoy?
Exactly.
Like, that is a scary thought. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, but like, who's even going to know this is happening? You know what I mean? So, I said all that to say there's so much stuff that you've even helped me with. You know, I know Melissa, why she's has a girl crush on you. Author. She has so many author crushes, but you're at the top of the list. But now I see why, because there's so much about it that feels daunting. But you don't not only offer hope, you offer a plan of, like, here's what you do. Like, even the thing that you said about your breaks are your breaks. You can't necessarily change that. You just have to work with it. That is such a strong revelation. It's like me and Melissa grew up with parents who didn't have a lot of money. First cars were hoopties. So you can't fix it. You just know that if you want to turn this car on, you got to hit this three times and then hold the gas in the middle. And
another
then it will turn
car
on.
Analogy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what
you
I thought
of.
You
work with what you have.
You work with what you have. You can't either have money or knowledge, but you learn how to make your car work. You know what I'm saying? Melissa's first car did not go up hills.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did is looked at a map to get to this church. We went this way and came down the hill, parked this way.
Yes.
And then when we left, we went down the hill. Mm-hmm. Right? So that is more empowering than feeling fearful of, like, well, it doesn't go uphill, so we should just never drive it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, you work with what you got, and you learn your body, you learn your partner's body, you learn all that. And it's my last thing, because I've been quiet for a long time. Sometimes it just sucks. That one experience might not work out. Okay, your break was tapped. don't criticize or judge it. Move on. Because it is really when you dwell on it that it becomes like a thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then you can't get your mind out of it. And then the whole experience is lost. And then you're a bad person. Your sex. Your husband's going to cheat on you. You're going to watch porn. You're going to go on there. Whatever you tell yourself. All that comes cascading down 100%. So quickly. And if you don't give power to it, then it doesn't always have to. You know what I mean? So those are some of the things I learned. And I'm normal.
One of the things normal. I say a lot is that confidence comes from knowing what is true. Like knowing you've got a sensitive break, you can be confident. Like this is just a thing that is true about me. But joy is the hard part, and that is loving what is true. Even if it's not what you were taught should be true, even if it's not what you wish were true, loving the hell out of it anyway. There's an author named Brittany Cooper. She wrote a wonderful book called Eloquent Rage. She says that joy is when you are resonant with your purpose. Which for me feels a lot like the same thing of loving what is true. Like, here's who I am. Here's why I am who I am. And I want to, like, be resonant with my purpose instead of fighting it.
It is so exhausting to think that you are broken and therefore you work against who you are. Instead of saying, this is who I am.
Yeah.
And I just have to learn techniques, tricks, whatever that work well with who I am instead of trying to change that.
Let me reframe that.
Okay.
Instead of I need tips, tricks to work with who I am, I need to turn toward who I am and embrace it with love and compassion because I have spent all these years fighting against it.
So good.
Beating the shit out of it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This part of me needs the most love right now, the most kindness. Aww. It needs to be listened to and held like a child who has been told that they did something wrong, to be reassured that they are welcome as they are right now.
Wow, that's such a good visual, because that just happened to my son. He had lost a Switch, Nintendo Switch.
Oh, yeah.
And he
do you not know what that is? I know what a Switch is.
Oh, okay, I thought you were like,
to like a 13-year-old boy to lose.
And he's lost one. He left one in the backpack because we travel a lot. He lost one. So.
Oh.
The other day, he had lost one. He had lost an old one, but found an old one that was lost, right? So he tells me, he's like, Daddy, I want to talk to you. And then he's like, never mind. I'll tell Mommy. And then he tells Melissa, and then she comes and talks to me. And we weren't even going to get in trouble. Like, he wasn't even in trouble. Because we recognize they travel more than the average child. You know what I mean? It's extenuating circumstances.
Yeah.
So we give them a little more grace than we would if they just never went anywhere. So when he was expecting to be yelled at or fussed at or punished and was instead met with love and it's okay and we're glad that you told us, he crumbled up like, man, because he was expecting anger. And we're like, hey, man, it's okay. Look at the bright side. You found it. And I feel like that's what you're saying you have to do to yourself. I have to do to myself. Like, instead of beating yourself up and expecting the worst from your partner, like, just turn in and like, hug that. Like, it's really going to be okay. The Switch is $200. What's more important is that you feel comfortable. This is what me and Melissa were trying
to impress. That's trust. That's, are you there for me?
I want you to feel comfortable that even when you think you're going to get in trouble,
you can still come
and talk to us. And you'll be surprised. And then a lot of times that they've expected us to go ham on them, we meet them with love.
Yeah.
Because we don't want them to ever be in a situation where they feel like, I can't talk
to hide it.
I would rather just like, well, shoot, I got to tell my mom and dad. I don't know how they're going to swing it, but you know what I mean? If you beat them with that too much, they'll just lie. Or, you know, because God forbid they really need to tell me something, they're not going to feel comfortable doing that. Mm-hmm. And that same thing applies to my wife. You know what I mean? So that was really great. Really great. I'm glad you came.
One last thing can I
say? Oh, of course. I was just going to say, I'm leaving the floor to you to give your last bit.
The thing I'm asked about most often is, how do couples sustain a strong sexual connection over the long term?
Yeah.
And the model for what great sex in the long term looks like has nothing to do with what our fantasy is. In the research, what we find is these couples have two things in common. One, they're really good friends. Specifically, they trust each other. Totally. They're there for each other. And the second is, they prioritize sex. They decide that it matters for their relationship that they stop doing all the other things they could be doing, kids to take care of, work to do, other people to pay attention to, family members. Sometimes you do just want to just like watch Game of Thrones and then go to sleep, right? But it matters for their relationship that they cordon off time when what they do is they put their body in the bed, they let their skin touch their partner's skin, and their body goes, oh, right, I like this person. Mm-hmm. I like this. And when you show up to the party that way, when you allow yourself to play with this person that you trust and love, it reinforces the bond between you so that the next time you get to, like, it's, you know, Saturday at 3 o'clock, you, me, and the red underwear, let's do this. You're like, every time I do this, no matter how I feel, like putting the last of the toys in the toy box, putting the last dishes in the dishwasher, tromping up the stairs, here we go. And then, but you know that, like, when you get there, you're going to be so glad that you did. That's what great sex looks like in the long term.
That is something no one has ever said to us. I haven't heard that anywhere else, but that makes the most sense. Because after your kids grow up and move out, hopefully you have your friendship and trust. I can see you wanting to go to the next level with that person. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that, the more difficult that's going to be and how that weighs on you year after year. You feel like you trust them. It's just like you're slowly floating away from each other. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So leaning in and you know, even this, like, scheduling sex feels like a stigma. Like, yeah, because right? In movies, you're taught good sex
should be
spontaneous.
Yeah.
Nothing, hardly anything, even eating isn't spontaneous. You have to decide,
I'm hungry. Nothing that matters in my life happens unless it's in my calendar.
Facts. Right. So why not?
We are busy.
Yes. Amen. Yes. 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 Like, and that's even for me, like, I've internalized spontaneity is good. Good sex. Oh, we didn't even know we came in there. I didn't know what was going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, but that's because in movies, they bust in. We talked about this in the Love Hour tour last year or the year before last. In the movies, you bust in the house and rip shirts off and stuff. But even that scene was scheduled. Yes. It was on a call sheet. They had makeup 2 hours ahead of time so that you could shoot that scene. Even the spontaneous sex scene that we think is real is scheduled. Even in a porn.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Porn sex is like NASCAR driving. There's a pit crew.
Yes.
Those are professionals on a closed course.
Yes.
These are professionals.
That's actually
on
a good point. We had a porn star on Asuka, and she was like, "There, it is work. It is the same way you go and we work construction. This is my work, and there's, you know what I mean? Like, but because we are human, we fall into the fantasy that what happens in movies is real, what happens in porn is real, what happens in 50 Shades of Grey is whatever it is. And if I can't do that, then I'm not doing it right.
Those people who have extraordinary sex, one of the key things they unlearn is this idea that sex is supposed to be natural and spontaneous and easy instead of a project and effortful. But when you're dating and in the hot and heavy falling in love, you do a lot of preparation, right?
You absolutely
so
do. True.
So if you just continue to do that much work in order to create a context where sex happens throughout your relationship, sex, and there will be times when sex is not a priority.
Yeah.
That is normal too. Like, don't beat yourselves up if there are times when it just drops off the radar, because sometimes life happens. Mm-hmm. And then you, like, put it back on the schedule and you remember the sorts of things that your partner needs in order to create a context.
Yes.
I require a long runway these days because I'm stressed out. I need to know a week in advance what's going to happen so that I can make sure I'm in the right state of mind when the moment comes.
Ebony and ivory, Emily. I'm Ebony, you ivory child. We the same. Okay, you have answered every question I've ever had that I wanted to ask you in life.
That's thrilling.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Do you have any other last words you wanted to say? Any messages that you like to get across to your audience that maybe we haven't hit?
Especially where to follow you, find you, and buy the things that you sell.
Yes.
So the books are available everywhere you want to buy a book. The first one is Come As You Are.
I recommend both of her books, but highly recommend this one.
And there's a workbook if you don't want to read, like, all the science and stuff. It's just worksheet after worksheet of how to apply this stuff in your life. And the second book that I wrote with my sister is called Burnout.
Yes.
And it's for people, especially women, who feel overwhelmed and exhausted by everything they have to do and still worry that they are not doing enough.
Mm-hmm. Really great book.
If human giver syndrome, if being a giver resonated with you, that's where you find that stuff is in Burnout. I don't really use social media to do, like, businessy things, but I'm at E. Nagoski, first initial, last name, on Instagram. Because it's fun. I'm doing a slightly challenging thing this year in 2020. Whenever I'm exposed to a Me Too story, I'm posting Me Too because I want the world to see what the world looks like through my eyes. I receive a lot of stories, and yet I still know people who tell me they don't know anyone who's been sexually assaulted or harassed. Oh,
wow. You know what? Have you seen The Morning Show on Apple Plus?
No.
You should watch it.
It's really good.
It's really good about Me Too, and it actually gave me some insight into the power structure and dynamic of how men can, because you know a lot of them are like, it was consensual, and it's because they don't even understand the power dynamics they have with women. They are not taught to look at them, respect them, or anything. So I now see how a man can have an experience with a woman where that she feels sexually assaulted and he feels like this was consensual. Mm-hmm. And I was I don't want to say it took that to me, but or took it from me, but it was like because the woman was speaking about it, you know what I mean? Like it was designed to talk about it. I was like, oh, this is what happens. Mm-hmm. Men are not taught to care. They think if you don't say no, stop, I don't want to do this, then you liked it. Mm-hmm. Anything short of pushing you off of me is consensual. And there's so much fear and freezing and all that stuff.
Exactly.
And feeling like you can't leave and you're trapped and what will happen to me.
Or
like,
this situation will escalate and I'll be in even more danger.
Exactly. Right. And men are, they're not thinking like that. Right. They're thinking you didn't. So much of rape, and this is me, we think so much of sexual assault that we're taught is woman jogging at night,
right,
somebody grabs her out of the bushes.
Right.
And that is something that happens in movies. What more than likely happens is someone you know, trust, you know, some experience, something like that. And that's why people, and women don't talk about it. That's why people say, I don't know anybody. Men say they don't know anybody. Women say there's hardly a woman I don't know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's good for that conversation. It shed a lot of light into the way men think.
So rather than end on a dark note,
because
I could go like way further into the darkness on that one. But so the short way to talk about this stuff that I've come up since Come As You Are was published is, did you know people believe you more when the things you say rhyme?
No.
It turns out they remember it better and they believe you more if it rhymes. So here it is. Pleasure is the measure.
Pleasure is
the measure of sexual well-being. It's not how much you crave it. It's not how often you do it, who you do it with, where you do it, even whether or not you have an orgasm. It's whether or not you like the sex you are having. If you are having fun, you are doing it right.
I do believe you more. Pleasure is the measure. Dr. Seuss.
That was really good, too. I could go off on a whole other tangent on that.
And I could make a lot of things that rhyme.
Was...
Titties
really
are the litties.
All right, we're dead here.
Breasts are
thank
the best.
Thank you. thank you so much, Dr. Emily Nagowski, for joining us here today and having such a rich, thorough conversation. I pray and hope that you, my audience members, have gotten something out of this. I know I have.
Me too.
If you have not, please make sure that you are following Emily. She actually reposted something from sexologist Shamira not that long ago when T.I. did something. And I was like, two of my faves in one spot. I'm going to explode. So make sure
make
that
room
you
for that.
I know. So make sure that you are following her. Make sure that you pick up her both of her books. If you are in premarital counseling, do not say I do without reading Come As You Are. That is a mandate from me myself, who has no power, but I have just hereby anointed myself the power to tell you, do not walk down that aisle until you have a full understanding of your sexual being. And that book provides so much insight and information I'm sure you don't know. I think that's it. In the meantime, between time, make sure you go to thelovehour.com. We are still accepting registration for the Love Hour conference coming in July of this year, child, because we officially in 2020. And I will also be announcing my 14 days of love in February to include a giveaway. I just got the graphic for it last night and I'm so excited. Okay, that's it. That's all. Thank you guys so much. Until the next time. Bye.